And welcome to another Friday edition. We have a special edition here, a recorded Zoom call, a roundtable Zoom call that the Pacifica Radio affiliates weekly attend. Various numbers of us gather and talk about issues. This topic was the in history of the affiliates program of the Pacifica Radio Network. Ursula Rutenberg is the Pacifica affiliates manager, and she begins the story of how this all came about.
Okay, so I'm going to try and give you the short version of what is obviously a long and auspicious history, cultural phenomenon of community radio in the United States. Two places in the world have been credited with starting the field of community radio. One place is Bolivia, where some miners that were striking kind of hit on the idea of using radio to keep community together while they were on strike. South America has a rich history of community radio, rich and auspicious. And at the same time, you know how they say great ideas often happen, you know, simultaneously in different places. Pretty much around the same time, KPFA was founded in Berkeley, California, and the Pacifica Foundation. And they pretty much started the concept of community radio here in the United States.
Ursula next talks briefly about Lou Hill, who is credited as the founder of community radio.
That's Lou Hill, if you can see him. That's the founder, really credited to be the founder of community radio. It's a tiny picture of him, but if you Google Lou Hill, this picture will come up pretty much universally. And Lou Hill was part of a group of conscientious objectors. This was during the war. It started in, you know, the pacifist movements that started in the United States in the 1930s. He was part of that. He was actually kind of a, child of a wealthy family. Because he was a pacifist, he and a group of his friends refused to fight in World War II and spent their time in a detention camp instead, and started a book club. And the book club grew into the idea of doing something that spread pacifism. That finally manifested after the war in them building KPFA in Berkeley. And that's kind of a long story unto itself.
Continuing on, we go to KPFA. What was the founding of KPFA? How did that come about? And how did it develop over the years? How was it different than the radio broadcast of the day?
KPFA was opened in 1949. I think the original idea for KPFA was in 1948, with Pacifica being founded as a nonprofit organization. And they finally managed to get on the air in 1949 in Berkeley. And many of you have heard this story. It's kind of a famed story. They literally had to give out radios because nobody was using the FM dial. And so they had to give people radios to hear what they were doing. Essentially, the idea, you know, in the bigger picture of media history, essentially the idea was that the AM dial had, you know, it was kind of, radio had reached a point where people had suddenly realized that there was, they could monetize it. And so the AM dial was really dominated by financial interests. And so the idea of building KPFA was to create a public space on the air. So in so doing, they kind of founded the concept of public radio, which was really only to come later in the 1970s, but it was essentially the idea of a public domain on the air. And so kind of true to form, many of the concepts they came up with, such as listener sponsorship and many other things like that, actually originated from that original plan at KPFA in Berkeley. And it's hard these days, it's hard to understand how big a thing that was, but it was big in the day. It was, people's heads were exploding that this was possible, and became a magnet for many, many people.
Speaking now of the development of the Pacifica Foundation.
So the Pacifica Foundation really started in Berkeley as one radio station. And then over the years, other communities wanted to be part of Pacifica and donated their stations to Pacifica Foundation. So Pacifica Foundation is essentially a basic nonprofit organization like your stations are. It just owns more than one license in more than one community. which were all donated in KPFK in Los Angeles was donated in 1959. WBAI was donated in 1960, KPFT in 1970, and finally WPFW in 1977. And I used to live in New York, so kind of the famous story in New York was when the WBAI in New York is actually, 95 point something or other. So it's a commercial frequency. No, it's 99.5. Okay, my New York head is coming back. It's 99.5. So it was a commercial station, and the owner of the station decided it should belong to Pacifica. And famously, when he called them to donate the station, they hung up on him because they thought it was a prank. It took a while for them to finally convince them that he was actually donating a real commercial radio station to Pacifica Foundation. So that was the inception of Pacifica Foundation. So it really was just a nonprofit organization that acquired a bunch of frequencies in different communities around the country, very much like yours. Like many of you have more than one frequency in different communities as well.
Community radio is born. Pacifica Radio Foundation is established, and more minds join in.
So then along comes Lorenzo Milam, and Lorenzo was a person from Florida. He was a young man from Florida who had become exposed to radio through listening to Black stations in the South, went to school in Berkeley and discovered Pacifica there and got involved and really fell in love with community radio. He eventually got into conflict with people at KPFA. KPFA became such a magnet for many, many people because it was really like an island in the country. He eventually busted out of KPFA. He left in 1958 and he went to Washington, D.C. to try and start a community radio station there and kind of bring this concept of free speech to Washington, D.C. And it was not well received. And so he was kind of run out of town. He came back to the West Coast and decided to start a radio station in Seattle. It was 1962. He built KRAB, which is kind of the famous station that's kind of seen as the first community radio station, which is a slightly different animal than the Pacifica station because it came out of a little bit of slightly different vision, but basically modeled after KPFA. And then he proceeded to, he stayed there for a while. KRAB went under and it was replaced by what's today the Pacific affiliate KSER in Seattle. That was kind of its successor. But Lorenzo moved on and he went around the country kind of like Johnny Appleseed, along with Jeremy Landsman, who was his engineer. And Jeremy used to be have a station up in, I think it was Anchorage, I can't remember, which was a Pacific affiliate. He was part of the network and it was called KWMD, Weapons of Mass Destruction. He was up there and he was part of the affiliate network. Since then, he went to South Africa and I'm not sure if he's back in the United States. But so Jeremy, he ran around with Lorenzo and built these stations. And so Jeremy is kind of like talking to Jeremy is kind of like sitting around a campfire and just like with your mouth hanging open. He's got so many stories to tell. He's quite a character, right? Right, Robin?
Robin Collier, Director of Cultural Energy, KCEI, Taos, New Mexico.
He's great. Yeah, he's been posting on Facebook a lot of his different stations that he's been involved with. So it's fun to see that.
Yeah. So he's really the last of the, he's a true pioneer. So Jeremy and Lorenzo went around and they built a lot of stations. They built one in Dallas. They built one. I'm trying to remember the station in Santa Cruz, which recently ended. They built in KOPN in Missouri. They built a station in St. Louis, which I do not think exists anymore. And they built WRFG, which is Heather's station. So she's going to tell you about WRFG later. So this was known as the Crab Nebula, named after the original Crab Station, KRAB in Seattle. Eventually, now, many of you probably know about Lorenzo. He wrote the very famous book, Sex and Broadcasting, which is a handbook for how to build a community radio station. And when I read it, I was astonished. It's truly an interesting document. if you haven't read it, it's definitely worth reading. Let's say it follows an incredibly crooked path of logic, but he does really articulate the spirit of what we're trying to do here. But he finally had a nervous breakdown, you know, couldn't handle the whole community radio thing anymore, and basically stepped out. And I think he moved to Mexico after that for a great deal of the time and finally died there just last year. That was Jeremy. So that was really the, what, you know, the inheritance that we share here with the affiliate network. He was really the person who built that vision and which has continued on since.
And that's a glimpse of how we got started. The Pacifica Radio Foundation continues to grow.
So getting back to Pacifica, you know, meanwhile, Pacifica was growing. Just about everybody at that time who was doing community radio stations was still seeing Pacifica as kind of the guidepost in terms of content and, in a sense, you know, direction, because that was kind of the original model. And so what happened was kind of what happens naturally with radio, you know, with any sort of movement. People start wanting to work together, right? And so you had this development, all these folks who were trying to build these community radio stations kind of as a brave new world. They were talking to each other like we are. I mean, they didn't have Zoom, obviously, but they're still, people communicated, you know, wanted to try and help each other. And so in the 1970s, KPFA developed a news department, and this was shared with other radio stations through the telephone. They also eventually started a Washington bureau, which was kind of, you know, you still see traces of that with Mitch Jeserich spending a lot of time in Washington, D.C. And so there was the need for news. And so Pacifica was kind of seen as the people who would create that news because they had just a little bit more capacity. And then you also had, you know, program exchanges, which was literally people sending each other tapes. And then in the 1970s, they began to want to work together, literally, physically. And so they began to, under the leadership of Larry Bensky from KPFA, they started to go to national presidential conventions and cover, do live coverage of presidential conventions. And so that was kind of the beginning of the idea of like, hey, we can actually, you know, do radio together. And so, and then in the 1980s, Pacifica rented a space on the NPR satellite. And so they had a satellite space. And so not only were they able to send programs to affiliates with satellite technology, they were also able to give space on the satellite to other radio stations to distribute their work. And so what you're hearing, you know, the reason I'm telling you all this is because this is why we exist today, because this was all of this kind of very natural activity that developed for very concrete reasons that became the affiliate program. That's how it started. It was just, you know, people needing to help each other, people wanting to work together because they were all kind of like on little life rafts in a big sea trying to do this kind of media, which is, was completely different from what was happening, you know, in all of the other media landscape in the United States. And so everything we do today was essentially, has its roots in that, that need of a, basically a radio movement to, you know, people that wanted to work together. So we still have the basics of that today. We have, you know, Pacifica providing some programming that is kind of flagship programming. I mean, like Democracy Now!, even though we no longer own Democracy Now!, we created it and still, because of that, still distribute it. We have other shows that serve somewhat that purpose. And then the, you know, the we used to let people use our satellite, well, it wasn't PRSS then, the NPR satellite, and, you know, to distribute their own programs. So there was the desire for Pacifica to provide technology to distribute affiliates' work. And then there was just the need for mutual support. And that's basically still the foundation of what, that's basically what we're still doing, right? I mean, that's pretty much it. And it's always kind of based on the principle that we just want to do radio together. It's always, the affiliate program has always stayed very close to the ground that way. We just want to do radio together and figure out how to do that as in a, you know, a grassroots way. In the 1990s, Pacifica got its own satellite. It also developed a news department called Pacifica National News, and it developed Democracy Now!. A lot of kind of what spurred the national, the idea that we could really provide substantial national program was the hearings Larry Bansky covered, the Iran-Contra coverage hearings became of this really amazing, you know, a big magnet for national attention. And so this this idea that Pacifica could create national specials took hold. And so you had these going, you had these national specials going on, you had Democracy Now! Was developed, and then you had Pacifica National News, and these were all on this, on the KU satellite, which was the satellite Pacifica rented of its own. And so in the this was in the 1990s, Pacifica began really in earnest to try and build a formal affiliate program. Because up until then, it was all pretty, you know, kind of came and went, but it wasn't clear. You know, there was the program exchange and the Pacifica Radio Archives kind of took over the program exchange activities kind of at the same time that the NFCB was created. There was kind of this interest in program exchange. So that out of that, you kind of began, you got a list of stations that could become affiliates. And so we're just kind of trying to figure out how do we make this like a real thing. And then in the 1990s, they really formalized it, gave out actually free satellite technology to get people to join. I don't know, Matt, were you part of the free satellite exchange program? I think WERU was part of that originally. So I think at that point they got it. There was about 60 to 90 stations that became affiliates, or maybe almost 100. And so that became like an affiliate program and was very formalized, and it was located out of Los Angeles, and then moved to Washington, D.C. when Pacifica's headquarters were moved to Washington, D.C. in the late 1990s. And now we're kind of getting into the territory that's known as the Pacifica Takeover, where which is a very big story that I won't even try to go into right now, but that was really, you know, how I entered the picture.
And now we hear more of the story of what became the Pacifica Affiliates Network as we know it today.
And with it came some very autocratic and somewhat unfair demands made on affiliates, and that fostered rebellion and the collapse of the affiliate program. Along with many other things at Pacifica. And so by the time the Pacifica struggle ended in 2002, Pacifica had 16 affiliates left. And boy, were they angry. That's I entered Pacifica Foundation through the struggle. I was an activist who was part of what they called the Pacifica Campaign. We were kind of like the Marines of the Pacifica struggle. After after there was a settlement where the network was kind of returned to its mission, I think one could say. Eventually, out of that, I was hired to figure out what happened with the affiliate program, and so in trying to figure that out, I ended up creating a job for myself in the process, and the Pacifica. Decided in I think it was 2002, I was asked to do a survey, which took me about half a year to do, of trying to talk to people and get them to tell me who they were and what their relationship had been to Pacifica. It was very difficult because, like most wars, everybody's angry afterwards. And so people didn't want to talk to me when I said I was from Pacifica. So it was very, very interesting. And Matt was actually one of my guides at that time when I was really trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And Matt was, WERU had played a role in the Pacifica struggle. And so he was familiar with what had happened. And so, I didn't know anything. I was a mural painter by profession. And so I was really schooled by all these angry people. And I really learned my lesson. It's really, when people are mad, it's really, really good to listen to them because they will really tell you what they think. And so out of that process, I wrote an executive summary, which you can find on our website, which essentially describes the history of all of this and what happened during the struggle. As a result of that executive summary, the Pacifica decided, it had to decide between a program, a national program director, and a national affiliates manager, and they decided for the affiliates manager because they felt that the restoration of the affiliate program was at the top of their priorities. And so that became the beginning of the affiliate program that we know as today. Like I said, you know, the genesis of this was a survey where I got yelled at a lot. It was going to the GRC where I got yelled at a lot, although Joseph did not yell at me. He was one of the first people I met, and he was the first person who signed up for the program again. And so I love Joseph dearly. And at NFCB conferences where I got yelled at a lot, and it was great. I mean, people had a lot to say, and what the program we have today is a result of the feedback we got. And it was very good because of people were so open with their feedback, we were able to build a program that has had tremendous durability because it's based on what people, you know, want and need, and it's really has remained in that area. AudioPort was a conversation between myself, somebody named Dina Colbert, and Norm Stockwell from WRT. We were all pretty drunk sitting in a bar in San Francisco, and he mapped out AudioPort on a paper napkin, and the rest was history. So I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that, you know, what we have today in community radio is really a radio movement. And the relationships we have are so good and so important because they come out of what people naturally wanted to do, which is to work together. When I took this job, I kind of realized really quickly on that I was in a very fortunate position of being able to walk in front of a really magnificent parade that I did not build. So this is really history that built who we are today.
And as media lives on, we now come to Low Power FM.
So then we enter the area that many of you belong to, which was when low power stations became possible. This is the beginning of the barn raisings and low power stations, which some of you are, and you're that new generation that has brought in a whole new energy to the field. Before I end, just one more thing. I got to show this. This is Bob Fast. Probably most of you have heard Bob Fast actually died last weekend, and he was WBAI. He was really the founder of Freeform Radio and really changed the way that everybody did radio. He was also responsible for the discovery of, he ran a late night program in New York during the era of the counterculture, the height of the counterculture. And so his radio show was kind of the living room of the counterculture in New York City. There, if you want to, I don't know if you've noticed this in AudioPort, there is a in the From the Vault section from the archives, there is a show about him, and it is really cool show. It's really worth listening. There's one section where Arlo Guthrie is banging on a piano in the studio doing a rendition of Alice's Restaurant that you will not recognize. It is absolutely hilarious. It's a very cool show if you want to play some radio history for your listeners, and it's very relevant because Bob just died. So, you know, while community radio stations were really kind of building the fine art of being the voice of their community, Pacifica was kind of building the fine art of being cutting edge journalism and breaking the stories on the national front that, couldn't be broken, like the Vietnam War. The story of the Vietnam War was broken through WBAI, just countless. You know, they covered Freedom Summer down in Mississippi. So they kind of were working on, you know, building the cutting edge to the community radio journalism. So I'm going to leave it there because there's so much to talk about. And it's a topic that I dearly love. I think it's just the coolest thing ever.
Matt Murphy, General Manager, WERU, Blue Hill, Maine.
Yeah, I just want to send a huge shout out to Ursula and your cohorts. We met, way back at the beginning there. And I've always been impressed and admired your work, Ursula. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. Well, you were one of my mentors. So
likewise, we were muddled along together.
It was very exciting to start the program. It was also really before the internet had taken hold. And so we were still what the internet is today. We were still that free information conduit. And it was exciting days.
And difficult times that that we all went through, and you were right in there. So thank you.
Showing on the Zoom reactions, there were several hearts, thumbs up, and much applause.
Oh, thank you so much.
The Friday Edition is a production of KIDE Hoopa Tribal Radio, produced, hosted, and engineered by Joseph Orozco. For KIDE, we thank you for listening.